St. Paul expresses a kind of a regret for the person he was before. He was such a zealous Pharisee, zealous for the law, that he rounded up Christians and had them sent to prison, and some of them were put to death, and so he kind of has murder on his hands. But at the time he was doing that, he was feeling very self-righteous about it. He was doing the right thing. And then he meets the risen Lord on the road to Damascus, and he has this conversion experience where he is asked by the Lord, "Why are you persecuting me?" And he realizes that in persecuting the church, he's persecuting Christ. He has this conversion experience. He just kind of dumps everything that he was, everything that he tried to do before, by the wayside, and accepts Christ. And now he feels possessed by Christ. He is in Christ. In another place, St. Paul says, "It's no longer I who live, but Christ living in me." So the old person has died, has passed away, doesn't exist anymore. Now this new person exists, and it's Paul-Christ. It's Christ living in him. And that's our baptismal experience too. We need to be reminded of it every now and then, but that's our baptismal experience. On the other side of the font, on the other side of the river, on the other side of the Red Sea, you know, this body of water that is death-dealing, and a symbolic drowning has taken place so that the old person who used to exist no longer does. And now a new person exists, Christ living in me. But it's not as if that was just a one-time occurrence and then you never have to worry about it again. As striking and as once and for all as Paul experienced his conversion, he still recognizes that it's an ongoing thing. He doesn't have possession of the prize yet. He has enough humility, enough recognition of the way grace works, that he knows that he has not accomplished the race just yet. But he is possessed by the goal. The goal is Christ, and he's already possessed by him. He no longer belongs to himself, he belongs to Christ. That is his identity, that's his new person who is in the process of being formed into the image and likeness of Christ. Conversion is always like a second chance. You know, our communion song all through Lent has been the God of second chances. This mercy of God that we endlessly celebrate, that somehow miraculously, gracefully forgives us and gives us chance after chance as we walk our journey, some starting and stopping, two steps forward, one step back, but on the journey toward the finished line. And Isaiah, in that first reading, points out that one of the reasons we know that God is on our side, that God is merciful, is because of what he did in Egypt and through the Red Sea. He rescued them. So Isaiah is speaking to people in exile in Babylon, and they have lost hope that they're ever going to get to be able to return to Israel. And so he's trying to bolster their hope by reminding them of what God has done in the past. But however, lest you think that God is only active in the past, forget the things of long ago. I'm doing something new. I'm doing something right now. Can you not perceive it? Can you not see in your life that somehow I am active now, not just in the past? But it's also about the future, isn't it? It's about the finish line. It's about the final goal, the realized kingdom, in which the journey will be finished. The pilgrimage is over, and we will be one with God, seeing God face to face, and we will possess it because it will have been given to us completely by Christ. Now, the gospel talks about two second chances. The first one is more obvious. It's the woman. She has been caught in her sin. It's a very serious sin that, according to the law of Moses, she must be stoned. And she knows she's been caught. She knows what the punishment is. She's ready to die. She figures any moment now they're going to start throwing the stones, and she's gone. But Christ, God, mercy itself, steps into that situation and tells her that he doesn't condemn her and tells her to go and don't sin again. In other words, it's conversion. Here's your chance to die to what you were and what you did before. God isn't holding that against you. Now you've got a fresh start. Now go and act like it. Go and don't sin again. But the Pharisees and the scribes are the other group, and they have set Jesus up. They've put this woman in front of him and reminded him of the law of Moses. But the problem that they set up is that if Jesus says, yes, Moses' law says that, so we must stone her, it was against Roman law for them to kill someone, to execute someone without a trial. And so he would have been in trouble with the Roman authorities if he said that. And if he was too merciful and just forgave her, then they would condemn him for being too merciful. They've got him in a trap. But Jesus says, he turns the tables on them. He says, let the one who has no sin cast the first stone. In other words, are you not sinners too? Have you no recognition of God's compassion? Is none of that in your hearts? Are you so self-righteous that you don't even see your own sin? And they recognize that they too are sinners, and so they put down their stones and they walk away one by one. In other words, he gives them an out. He gives them a way to walk away without the confrontation, without a defeat. He gives them a chance, a second chance, to see through their own self-righteousness their own sin. You know, one of the biggest blockages to recognition of our sin is self-righteousness. We're so busy condemning the other that we don't see our own sin. And he saves them from that. They would have been condemned. They would have been lost if he hadn't given them a chance to see their own sin. The only way out of sin is to see it, is to own it. That's what confession is about. That's what we Christians do. We own our sin, we confess it, and then we have the second chance. Then we have the opportunity to move on. But if you're just steeped in it, locked in it, you're in this hopeless situation where you can't experience God. The primary way we experience God is through God's mercy.